Welcome back, everyone. Episode 105, just humming along here. So it's good. We got Lisa in the house, Tyler, and then we're bringing back by high demand analyst John. John, how's it going?
It's going pretty good. How about you?
Good, good. So we're going to get into some good stuff today. We'll start with, I'm sure we'll have a little banter at the end. We may get to some fun questions that Lisa didn't have for episode last week, but anyway, stay tuned for the end. Two truths and a lie. We're focused a little bit on private credit. We'll discuss a little bit of the show on private credit, private equity. It seems to be in the news and kind of why it's in the news, why it's important, why we should know. We don't have a whole lot of exposure here at Gradient, but it's certainly something at least to be kind of aware of. All right, we're going to start with, I didn't change this either. 1, 2, and 3 I have. It should be A, B, and C, but we'll switch it over to Lisa's way. 1, private credit has surpassed $2 trillion in AUM globally. That's a big number. 2, private credit loans are typically floating rate. Or 3, it typically takes private lenders longer to close deals versus traditional banks. We'll start with the somewhat newbie, John. We got 1, 2, and 3, or A, B, and C, like I like to refer as. What do you think?
I didn't know that this is such a big discussion point.
It is. I'm still a little thrown.
Let's go back to A, B, and C next week.
We should. So, John, where do you think the couple truths and a lie lie in that list?
I think that the lie is going to be number 3. I think the banks have more regulations and kind of hoops to jump through, which is going to make them obviously take longer to get the deals closed. And just from being in different meetings with some of the private credit guys that we've been talking to, I know they've thrown around floating rates and different AUM targets. So I'm leaning towards 3.
All right. Lisa, what do you got to add to that?
I believe 2, so B is true. It's floating rate usually. 2 trillion globally. I'm not 100% certain on the number, but sounds kind of in a ballpark, so sounds right. But I also think it's C or 3. That's one positive or one benefit of private markets, that they are usually being able to move faster than traditional banks. So I think it's the lie is 3.
Tyler?
3 as well.
Yeah. I kind of came as a softball. I figured John, you know, has kind of been working a little bit on our stuff with the private credit and private equity guys. So I figured I just wanted to come on the show and just completely fail in the first, or well, I guess it's your second attempt. All right. Let's talk about why, you know, I get this question from several different people. Why would people choose private markets versus public markets and traditional banking? And whether it's borrowers and lenders and kind of what's the difference. Tyler, do you want to jump in here, kind of your thoughts on why people would actually look at it, or even why you would invest as an investor?
Are you asking from the borrower standpoint?
Either or, buyer or lender or investor.
So, right? So from the investor standpoint, so obviously we have our private wealth series, which has private credit in it. But then in our fixed income total return, we also have an ETF that's called PRIV, which is a State Street product. It's about, they can monkey with the allocation, but it's anywhere between 20 to I believe 60% in private credit, and then they use investment grade public credit as the liquidity backing to it. So it's not an interval fund; it's a true ETF. But the reason why you invest in it is, from a private credit standpoint, is you get higher yields because oftentimes companies will go to private credit because they can't get a loan from a bank, whether it's they have too much debt, whether they're a newer company, or the bank just doesn't have the balance sheet to do it. And so typically with private credit, what happens is you get extra yield. And so to your point on the floating rate, like in your question, they typically do like a SOFR plus
some spread
something, right? So the less credit worthy the company is, it's going to be SOFR plus 5%. So if SOFR is at 4%, the company is paying 9%, and they review that on a quarterly, semi-annual, or annual basis, depending on the loan terms. So it's a nice diversification from your traditional investment grade credit because you get the higher yield. Plus, depending on where you're at in the overall tranche of the fund that you're in, you can actually get pretty good yields for pretty, I would say, safe-ish type of companies. Now, what we've seen in the market recently is software stocks selling off, which means software companies in the private markets are selling off, which means the private equity, private credit is selling off as well. So that makes it a little bit more challenging when initially you probably thought that they were higher rated type of companies. But generally speaking, you just get higher interest rates because of the SOFR plus, and it continually resets to make sure that you're keeping up with where rates are at, where other companies are at, where inflation is at, where everything generally is going. And so it's a night. Now the downside is SOFR plus. If SOFR goes down,
it goes down as well.
Your yield goes down, right? Yeah. So you have to be mindful of that as well. But generally speaking, it's a nice diversification in a fixed income type of portfolio.
Yeah. At least you got anything to add on.
Yeah, like Tyler said, I mean, it's less correlated to the public markets, right? It's fixed income or stocks, but it behaves a little bit differently, right? I mean, it's not that we are seeing all of what's going on within these firms every day because they don't underlay the same regulations or the same transparency. So you kind of have to trust them a little bit of what numbers they're getting out.
Sorry, I don't mean to interrupt, but that's a good point because like 2022, when the public bond market was down 13%. Somehow private credit was down zero.
Yeah.
Right. Because they market themselves. Because
they didn't mark to market their actual holdings that they had. Mm-hmm. So
the less correlation or the less like volatility compared to traditional markets. So that's always a huge point, but we have to take that with a grain of salt or take that a little bit into perspective of why that is, of why that could be. And also a little bit of other things to note here, right? We cannot trade these as traditional assets either, right? You usually lock yourself up for a little bit. And there's a lot of a lot of things going on over the last years to make that more accessible for retail investors. That was first just, you know, for big endowments, big pension funds. They had
high net worth.
The funds and institutional and they had also the time to be invested in those, right? Because you lock yourself up for a longer period of time. So now with the more interval funds, evergreen solutions, also what we kind of brought out at the beginning of the year, these are getting more accessible, but it's still not traded as a traditional asset. So I think there is some differences that investors need to be aware of just so they know how they behave and what the differences are because it's not the same. And I think that could, you know, be for some surprises if you do not know exactly how they work. And also to your point, Tyler, that's from an investor perspective and also from a company perspective that is lending from the private market compared to traditional banks. First, either they cannot get loans because they're, you know, traditional banks just have high regulation, high credit requirements, especially after the great financial crisis. They were just not taking any risk whatsoever or any weird other situation that needed a little bit second looks. And that's why private credit got so big, right? Because they were the ones lending to these small businesses who are struggling or taking out. But I think that has changed as well. I think it's over time, it's not only struggling companies. It's also companies that want to be a little bit more flexible lending in the private markets, right? First of all, it's faster usually. They get their loans faster. They do not need to disclose as much as the other routes. And also for some companies, you know, when they're searching for funding, for some, it's the way to do an IPO at some point and go public and be a publicly traded company. Well, with this lending in a private market, they're able to maybe stay private a little bit longer and get their funding in this way. So there are different pros and cons, I think, from both sides.
Yep.
I think you just need to know, okay, what are you investing in and what are the differences?
I mean, John, who did we have in office recently that I think they were saying that they just did a, was it Apollo that said that they just did a deal with Intel I think.
Yeah, it was Apollo with the Apollo Debt Solutions.
Yeah. So the nice thing about private credit for these companies, like an Intel, to Lisa's point, they can be a lot more flexible. So they can put in different requirements. They can put in different stipulations that, you know, if the loan's not met, they can refi or whatever it is. Like the flexibility is there. Same thing with like CLOs. You hear about CLOs not defaulting. It's because they have provisions in there where they can
change things around.
Yeah. So
that just surprises me that to what the end of Lisa's conversation, what you just said and what John said is that traditionally, like you go years back, it was for the people that maybe weren't kind of going through normal banking standards, but now you're starting to see big blue chip companies do private.
So it's not that you just have the crap in there. Maybe it was like a decade ago after the great financial crisis.
So then if that's the case, then you got to wonder how much that spread, I assume that spread's come down a little bit too, right?
That's why it's nice, because if you look at a lot of these data centers, so a lot of the private credit might be directly with Microsoft, or it might be a backdoor through Microsoft because you're doing a loan for the actual data center, which has a 10-year lease from Microsoft for the data center, but you get SOFR plus. So a Microsoft, you might get on a traditional bond, you might get, let's say, 50 basis points of additional yield on top of a treasury, right? Yep. Because they're so highly, their credit is so high.
Like
right?
The government, if not better.
If not better. Actually, I think Microsoft might be a AAA in governments.
Yeah, that would be a bad example.
So through the private credit CLO type of space, you get exposure to Microsoft, but you get like a SOFR plus 1.3%. So you get either a direct Microsoft loan or a Microsoft backed loan, basically, through the data center on a 10-year lease where they have to pay the full lease, whatever. But you're getting that additional yield from Microsoft, which is an additional, 60 basis points. So you're getting 70, 80 basis points of additional yield for a Microsoft loan to go through the private-ish markets, which is why it's becoming so popular.
Yeah. John, obviously this reason we're talking about, they've been in the news a lot. You want to talk kind of why private credit, private equity has been in the news and kind of some of the headlines and kind of we'll kind of see where that goes.
Yeah, Tyler kind of hit on it a little bit, but most of the headlines have been focused in the software sector. So if we keep that in mind and really look at the different funds that are taking a diversified approach, they're going to be a lot more remote and removed from these issues than some of the other funds that have loaded up on the software sector. Mm-hmm. So keeping that in mind, and also keeping in mind that these are long-term investments and you're kind of looking through this period, it's kind of, to me, seems a little bit more like noise than an actual signal.
Sure. Tyler, obviously, I think the reason that they're in the news is we're starting to see these rising defaults a little bit. We're starting to see stories of redemptions and gating. I think that's the big thing. I think that kind of spooks you.
But
gating and redemption means like five. Like when you buy and sell a stock, you know, it's exchanged. You just put your order in. It gets executed. Now with these private investments, whether private credit or private equity, you're tying up your money, you're giving up some liquidity, but generally speaking, the returns are higher, low correlation, you know, lower standard deviation, all of these positive things. But the one thing is liquidity, right? It gets a little less liquid. And then you have, you know, these gates, what they call basically, if you want to get you can't get your money out tomorrow. There's usually a window, you know, whether it's monthly or quarterly that you put your request in, say you have $100,000 with this investment and you want to get your $100,000 out. If it's a stock, you hit your sell button, boom, you get your $100,000 out. With private, you know, credit and equity, it's, you know, they're not mark to mark daily. So that's the other thing, right? So it's, you don't necessarily, you kind of know where they're going, but not necessarily. And the other thing is there's windows. You can't just pick your day. It's you put in your request and normally it's fine. You put a request for $100,000, you get your $100,000 out. But now there's some of these gate redemption stuff. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So, and it's not even defaults. It's more people are concerned. So if you look at the stock market and look at the software stocks, they're selling off because of the disruption from AI and especially the seat-based software companies. And all we've heard about the last 2 to 3 years in private equity, private credit land is how amazing these software companies are. And the funds have been loading up on software just because you get these high quality, high margin companies for
an allocation are like 10 to what 30-40% of some of these funds.
So it's more the concern on the AI disruption and the potential. So it's not necessarily defaults yet. But there's been a lot of headlines on gating. So what typically happens is you put in your request during the window, and then on the quarter mark, they look at how much in redemption requests they've received. Most funds will carry anywhere between 2-5%. Some might go up to 10, but that's pretty rare.
Yeah, they want to be
2-5 is kind of in the range. But if you get more redemption requests or greater requests than that 2-5%, they'll either put you in a queue, and so they'll let you get like person one gets all your money, person two gets all your money, person three doesn't get any. Or what they'll do is, and this is more of what we've been seeing with the gating, is that they'll do prorating. So, you know, if we only have 60% of cash on hand for the amount of redemptions that we've had, we'll give everybody 60% of their cash. Now, the problem to the investor is you have to go back, do paperwork again during the window for the next quarter and the next quarter and the next quarter. And so the from an investor standpoint, it just takes, when you start getting this rush on these funds that have high allocations right now to software, we saw it in the REIT space a couple of years ago, and that was 2023, I think. Mm-hmm. Where you just have this rush on people trying to get their assets out because people are just concerned and they don't want to be in that space. And so it could take a year to get your money out. And that's what they call gating, is they're gating how much funds actually leave the fund.
Lisa?
I mean, I think there's a lot of headlines about that, certainly, because usually it's not a problem, right? Because usually if things are normal, people get their money. That
Yeah, we've gone ones, several years without right, hearing this issue.
The ones who are getting out are getting out, and the ones who are staying in is fine. But I think what we should also touch on, because it's important, is like, why are they doing this gating, right? Because it's like not just because they can or because they're just like, haha, we don't give you your money back. That's not what it is, right? In order for you to be exposed and invested, given what the fund is exposed to these loans, right? I mean, that's not liquid. They cannot just go to the companies like, okay, we need all the loan back because we need to pay our investors because they want to get out, right?
Think about it like a mortgage, right?
Right.
If exactly. Everybody pool mortgage, everybody said, I want money out.
Exactly. Like, you cannot pay a full mortgage back just because some investors need their money. So
because the bank says, I want my money.
Exactly. So in order for you to be invested according to what it is exposed to, obviously, most of your money is exposed to these loans, and they all have liquidity buffers for times like this to being able to get investors their money back when they want to get out. But other than that, this is also for a safety reason for the investors who stay in the fund, right? Because sure. It's like, well, the ones who are staying would be the losers then, right? Because they are staying with what's left. So it's a safety feature for the investors who are staying in it. So it's also in your own interest if you're invested in such a vehicle. So it's not only negative, it's kind of a safety feature, and they are not doing that just because to add some complexity or whatever. It has a reason why these redemption gates are in place.
Yeah, because usually if you want to sell something that's illiquid, you have to sell it at a discount, right? Mm-hmm. So if you start selling too much at a discount, there goes all your gains. And then what's, like I said, whoever's left, it's the model's kind of broken. I mean, there's a trade-off of that versus the day-to-day marketing, like to Tyler's point back in the last credit. It's like bond markets are down 13%, but private credit was flat, which probably wasn't quite right, but they had the ability to look through the cycle, right? So, I mean, in the end of the day, if you're still getting your coupon, you're not defaulting.
And they're just reporting quarterly. So you see it in the public market, it can be really fast if you have a drawdown. And then private markets, okay, they're reporting quarterly and they're probably not taking the full hit. They're like gradually adjusting the value. So you kind of see more smoothing effect.
Yep.
It's probably not it, but it's kind of the artificial smoothing effect of that.
Well, so in my previous life at US Bank, we dealt a lot with these type of funds, not necessarily private credit, private equity, but private real estate. So the other thing you have to remember is, so in the traditional bond market or stock market, like there's similar bonds that allow you to price a bond, right? Because if it's public, there's generally similar covenants. There's similar look and feel to all of the bonds. Mm-hmm. So if Citigroup's bond is is being sold, you can generally, even though there might be slightly different covenants in within there, you can generally know what Goldman Sachs bond is going to be selling for, right? So you can, it's easy to mark to market on a minute by minute basis because there's liquidity there. With private equity, private credit, there's so many different agreements for each of the loans that you can't say, well, this bond looks like the Citigroup or Goldman Sachs. Mm-hmm. This looks very, very different because of the covenants and whatever else they put into it. So you can't just mark to market on the, in my previous life at US Bank, we did a lot in the private real estate side. So it all depends on the appraisals, right? It's not like every day, every minute, somebody's going out to every single one of the buildings
in your house and saying,
this is what it's worth for this minute, right? Yeah. And so even on a quarterly basis, they might only appraise 25% of their portfolio,
yeah,
right? You can't do it in an efficient manner.
Yeah.
And so when you do want to sell, this is where the liquidity comes from, is when you do want to sell, A, you can't get your money up, but they also, it's not like a, they don't know the true value at that specific point because they haven't appraised it necessarily.
Yeah.
So that's where you take your discount, is you're trying to get your money out, but also you just don't know what the true value is. So to hedge their bets, they're going to discount it more.
Yeah, that's a great point. John, we've had several of these guys in our office, you know, the Apollos, the Blue Owls, and all these different KKRs and mm-hmm. such. Kind of what, when they're talking about these redemption kind of gating factors, is it just like a one quarter event, or is it something that you and them are thinking it's going to take more than, you know, just one quarter here clearing event?
Yeah, usually they assume that it's going to last for a couple quarters as kind of headlines make their way through the news and more people that are invested kind of get a little spooked and want out. But like Lisa was talking about, they keep a liquidity sleeve usually between 5% and 10% just for this case. And that's why they do gate them, is because they don't want to exceed that liquidity sleeve. But there is always liquidity available to a certain extent to investors.
Yeah. Get out. But from the people that I sat in some of these meetings, it seems like it's a several quarter event, right? It's not going to be, to your point, if people hear about something that potentially might be going wrong, even if there's nothing going wrong, it's like, oh, mm-hmm. I can't get my money out. I want it all out. So now it's like, then you mm-hmm. hear that the gate was up. You're like, oh, I wasn't even thinking about getting out, but maybe I should.
Yeah.
Right. So I think this is probably a few quarter event.
Or if they think that it's going to take a couple quarters to get out, they might just get in line to get in front of it and get in the queue.
It's probably time to get in.
Yeah.
When you hear funds starting to, now it depends on the fund, obviously.
Yeah. I think that's where we and others need to do, you gotta really, you know, bear down and do your due diligence on it, right? Because software, again, if this AI plays out like some people are saying, is that certainly if you have 25-40% allocated to that kind of investment that's was on a trajectory being up here in valuation, mm-hmm. in reality it's could be half of that.
Yeah.
So
but just like normal stocks.
No, that's what I mean. It's good.
Buy low, sell high.
Yeah, no, I think there's probably, and that's kind of what talking to these guys, it seems like there's areas that are been around for a long time. And the other issue, you know, we didn't jump in here all the time, but just the new issuance of the last several years, right? It's after the kind of the 2022.
Yeah.
Are these very seasoned? Yes and no. Interest rates going up and things like that. And so then you get into performance. Like, you know, I thought was interesting, like private equity performance versus, you know, the stock market. I saw this chart from, and who had it all, but just talking about the rolling performance, a 3-year performance. And, you know, historically, the reason that you want to have exposure to private equity and private credit is you get better returns. You know, they're a little more illiquid, but that's fine. If they're liquid, you're getting better returns. That's a good thing. Low correlation, less standard deviation, but you kind of want that superior return, which the last 3-year rolling years is they're actually underperforming. As a whole, again, we're basking in these versus the overall market, the S&P 500 by like 7%, which I thought was interesting. Tyler, you got any thoughts on that?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with, I can't remember what podcast I was listening to, but this was a couple of years ago, and they were talking about all the technology that they were loading up on. And a lot of these and is a little bit different than private credit, but the private equity firms have been loading up on any software technology because 2 years ago, that was the hot space to be in.
For sure.
And now obviously we're seeing a different story of AI. You can vibe code and essentially create your own CRM, create your own backend, whatever. And these companies aren't as valuable anymore, which yes and no, I agree and don't agree with, but I think that's part of it. Why you've seen this underperformance is they're a lot of the private equity side is loaded up on technology.
Yeah,
that has just been, they've overpaid the last 2 years and now all of a sudden they're not worth as much. And so your drawdown is so significantly more than you would traditionally see in the market, which yes, there's a lot of software technology in the market, but your private equity is not investing in the semiconductors like we've seen ripping the last 2 weeks. They're in the software space.
Yeah, the startup software names. Yeah. And then the other thing is private equity generally invests in smaller size companies, right? So it's the small bias, whereas the market's recent last several years been driven by those Meg 7 names. So that's, if you're not in those Meg 7, it's hard to even compete even on those small cap names. So yeah, no, I think we're in interesting times.
Yeah, I think also a difference between private equity, private credit are like how interest rates are affecting it. I mean, private credit is kind of the lender side. So higher interest rates would mean more money for them because it's floating rate, right? Yeah. Maybe also more risk because some of these companies might not be able to pay the higher interest rates. But generally, there is more return to be expected from higher interest rates on the private credit side. Opposed on the private equity side, they are the ones who owe the money, right? Mm. Because some of these, and you touched on it, right? They overpaid for a lot of these deals. A lot of that is heavily debt loaded, right? So that's the leveraged buyout, for example. It's a heavily leveraged to buy out some firms. Well, if that's floating rates, all of a sudden they have to pay more for these loans. So that can spiral as well. So I think that interest rates is very much a different how it affects private equity versus private credit, which is also a huge point where private equity was hit over the last couple of years as interest rates were rising.
Yeah, well said. Let's change gears here. We talked a lot about private equity and private credit. I'm going to have Lisa wrap this up at the end here. The segment we didn't get to last week, which, Lisa was, our fun stuff kind of, we're sitting here in the middle of May. What are we, May?
May 12th.
13th.
May 13th.
Yeah. Mid-month.
Yeah.
We got a lot going on. We have earnings been good and we got some, May is Cinco de Mayo. Mm-hmm. Also our El Presidente's birthday. So it's always a little more fun time around here. But, Lisa, why don't you kind of wrap up the end here of some fun stuff?
Yeah, that was supposed, like you said, to be last week's fun ending because last week was Cinco de Mayo. Anyways, we got deep into Elon Musk and Sam Altman's court battle. So
we've been off the wall in private equity, private credit today. We've had thrown everybody for a curveball here.
Yeah, we go really deep into the topics lately. Anyways, so we thought, what? It's a fun segment, and why not do Cinco de Mayo a week later? So what I thought we were doing is we do a little Cinco de Mayo market fiesta.
Oh, nice.
And I'll tell you kind of some Mexican related, Cinco de Mayo related stuff and kind of what the equivalent for markets or sectors, industry, different stocks would be. So for the taco trade, and taco trade that's known as an acronym for something else as well, right? And if someone is interested in all of that, I just wrote up market reflections on taco, nacho, and FOMO. So when you're interested in what that all means, head to the Gradient Investments website and you can read all about that.
Tyler, that's worth an applause. Just how she just promo that.
Just getting the advertising out. Anyways, the taco trade in this case is kind of what's the safe trade right now. Then the tequila trade, which is a little bit more spike and spice, so a little bit more aggressive. And then the guac hatch, the guacamole hatch that we kind of mix in as a hatch within the taco. And then we have a salsa surprise because that's always the kind of tingy surprise salsa. So what is getting a little bit extended. So let's start with the taco trade. What's your safe bet right now? What's your safe, neatly tacoed in
industry,
stock, asset class, whatever?
You really want to know this?
Yeah, I want to see what Tyler's going here.
Broadcom.
Oh my God, Tyler. I was seeing that. I was seeing Broadcom.
That's my safe trade right now.
That's your safe trade right now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, good. Broadcom was again mentioned in the podcast. Yeah. We should take count now how often we get Broadcom into podcast episodes.
That's a good one, Tyler. I actually don't disagree with you. I think that's a good safe trade. So
see, Keith agrees. Let's go.
I should just piggyback off and throw my favorite on there is Amazon. I'm gonna pull a Tyler here. That's, you know, Tyler's known for his Broadcom. I'm known for Amazon. I do think that's a great, good trade, whether it's gonna get a little more spicy or if it's just a solid trade. So that's where I'm at. John?
I think for my safe trade, I would go Apple. It's kind of that mega cap name that's removed a little bit from the AI hype cycle. So I think that would be the safe one I'd go with.
Mm-hmm. Lisa?
I back off of Keith, Amazon. Oh, we're the Keith That's and I true. Are the Amazon that people is. Here, right? I mean, since last year, the year before, we are heavily.
They're showing a little love for us.
Yeah, really. Right. And I think that's really can be the safe trade. I mean, they're exposed, obviously, with their AWS to AI heavily, but also on the retail side, which is going better. I think that's still, you're exposed to both kind of the safer side and the more aggressive side. I think it's a good bet still. Yeah. Was a laggard last year, but looks a little bit different this year. So I think could still be some safety with a little bit of spice. Which brings us to the tequila trade. Now I want the really spicy stuff. So what's the most aggressive, volatile trade?
You should start with tequila boy over there. Tyler likes tequila.
I do love tequila. Eledon Pharma.
Okay. Explain that a little bit more. Yeah.
They are, so recently, so me being a type 1 diabetic, I follow that pretty closely. Mm-hmm. So they are there's been stem cell research done on curing type 1 diabetes, but the problem is the patients either revert back to being insulin dependent or they get some type of illness or something post the stem cells. Eledon has been, at least to this point, they've been the first ones they did a 12 patient trial. And they've been the first ones to have all 12 at this point be insulin independent, not needing any like pumps or glucose, trackers. And nobody has gotten sick. Nobody's reverted back to being insulin dependent. Stock has ripped the last like 3 months.
And what's the name again?
Eledon Pharmaceuticals.
What's the ticker?
ELDN.
Mm-hmm. Wow, you might get some advertisement off that.
Keith, what's your tequila?
That's a good question. I'm going to change it up. Instead of just doing an individual stock, I'm going to go a group of stocks that I'm going to go, I think they're overvalued. So I would be more inclined to be not owning them or, as some people would say, shorting.
Triple Qs.
So what?
Are you going triple Qs?
No, that's the triple long. I did go triple long. The Qs, which is going the NASDAQ not too long ago, and that trade's done very well. But I think there's a lot of semiconductors that are very overvalued. Stuff like not Tyler's favorite, Broadcom or NVIDIA. I think those are solid names you want to be involved with. But there's other names I think that have moved 50, 80, 100% in the last month. Mm-hmm. I think those names, I would take the opposite side and think that they're going to go down. Names like, if you want actual names, it'd be like Qualcomm's or Intel's. Those are bigger names, but there's a lot of smaller semiconductors.
Flex, I think that
they're getting caught up with this semi trade build out of AI that I think are a little overheated. Mm-hmm. So a little too spicy for me.
Yeah.
I was going to go kind of the same path as Keith there. I was thinking CoreWeave. It's obviously got,
that's a good one.
Yep. It's got a ton of debt, so it's definitely highly levered and very levered bet on the AI play. So that one's definitely a more aggressive, volatile one.
That's the tequila. Yep.
Yeah. Lisa?
I go with a group of stocks. I go with defense. Mm-hmm. Because obviously.
You going long or short?
Well, that's the question, right? I mean, depending on what's going on in conflict wise, but obviously they're moving as we're hearing geopolitical news, which obviously it's not short of that as of late. And they have moved like very well lately, but I think obviously volatile, but I think this is aggressive and there could be still a lot more of room to run.
Nice.
But obviously volatile because it's very dependent on what we are hearing out of the Middle East, if we're seeing some resolution or not, which is obviously the opposite.
Yeah, no, in the very defense, in the very, very near term, they've actually pulled back a little bit. So it's probably pretty good, interesting call.
So I would say
there.
That's definitely aggressive and, and volatile, but a little bit of spice and you can squeeze out some some return here. So let's go the other way now. John, I start with you again. What's your guac catch? Like how are we getting some guacamole hatch in the taco?
I think I would look to kind of industrials as a whole here as they kind of build out the electrification of the grid. They can still benefit from the AI super cycle, but they're a little bit more down the line and removed from the direct headlines that we've been seeing.
Mm-hmm. Keith?
Oh, that's a good question.
We can also say asset classes.
Yeah.
We do not have human.
I don't know if it's hiding. I'm going to kind of spin it a little bit saying what's kind of been underappreciated that I own. I think there's been a lot of pressure in some of these healthcare names, MedTech especially, which I don't quite understand. Mm. The valuations are getting to be 10 to 15 times forward PE multiples with
it's
solid growth.
Really
and
well.
Then they're not working. Yeah. So I'm kind of hiding in them, but I'm kind of not hiding very well because the stocks aren't doing very well. As a class.
Keith kind of took mine for his tequila trade, short, triple long, short, the semiconductors. That's my hedge because my PA is loaded up on...
PA's personal account for listeners.
Personal account loaded up on semiconductors. So
same.
Sox S is the hedge for me to try and...
There you go.
As these come down.
Lisa, okay, what do you got for...
I bring something else. Mm-hmm. I bring in a whole asset class that is where Gradient Investments is excelling for years now. I would say we were one of the first ones in that space, which is structured notes.
Oh, very good.
I go with that as an hedge. And we have different, you know, growth income opportunities based on different underliers like the Dow, the Russell, the NASDAQ, or the S&P, where you can actually get some good... caps, some good upside potential, but you can protect yourself with different, depending on how aggressive or conservative you are, to the downside with, for example, a 15% buffer, 20% buffer, even 100% buffer to really protect your principal, but still have upside potential. So you give a little bit of up, you give a little bit of that upside up for downside protection. And I think in, you know, times like this, it can be a wonderful addition to your portfolio to hedge yourself a little bit against downturns.
Mm-hmm. What's your last category here?
Last category is my salsa surprise. So we're what market narrative is getting a little bit hotter than expected? So apparently hot salsa. So what market narrative is getting a little bit overheated, exaggerated, not talked about enough? So what are we seeing there, Keith?
I'll go back to salsa. It? Well, it's just the semi. I think that whole AI as a whole, I think we're in, don't get me wrong, I think we're in early innings. I think the bill is great. I think some of these stocks are just getting in the near term ahead of themselves. There'll be a little bit of a reset there. I do think if the winners are going to be winners and you're going to want to find the winners, and those are going to be big winners over multi-years. I just think in the very short term, it's a little too spicy for me.
Mm-hmm. John?
I think kind of the other side of that coin is software as a sector, I think has been a little overdone, and they've kind of grouped together cybersecurity with software, which if you think AI is going to advance the speed of everything, you're going to need more and more security out there to protect you. So I think the cybersecurity sell-off is
that's a good call.
Gotten a little overheated.
Yeah.
One that I think is getting hotter and will get hotter is higher interest rates.
Oh, you took mine.
I think market's starting to price in one. Obviously, we got 3.8% inflation now. I may be wrong in my three-cut call. I'm still sticking to it on the back half of the year. But
I just wanted to ask, you still sticking to the three cuts?
But I do think the 10-year...
It's getting tough.
I think we're closer to hitting five than we are hitting four.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Yeah, mine is actually also going into inflation, interest rates. That inflation is that narrative, like we were seeing, okay, long are the Strait of Hormuz. We beat that horse to that when we're talking about that oil supply and all of that. It's still not resolved, which means it feeds into inflation. And we just got our first full CPI report since the war broke out. That was obviously hotter than expected. And then also PPI today, much hotter than expected. I think the fastest increase since 2022, which is the wholesale inflation. So one step above before it hits the consumer. So that is all, you know, gaining traction a little bit. And obviously that feeds back to what Tyler said to interest rate expectations that has changed dramatically to from, you know, the consensus 2 to 3 cuts coming into the year. Now we are, yeah, consensus is getting more and more ready or at least more comfortable with going the other route with potential of more rate cut expectations.
Hey, good for private credit.
to that point, we made the full circle. So, that's my little bit on that.
On that note, Lisa, thanks for preparing that section. So for all you listeners that stayed tuned to the end, hopefully you found some good stock ideas and industries and things to think about. So, all right,
but everyone. They're just our opinions, Keith.
Just our opinions. As always, just our opinions. So stay tuned and be back next week.
Not a recommendation here.
Investing involves the risk of loss. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be regarded as personalized investment advice or relied upon for investment decisions. Jeremy Bryan, Tyler Elligard, Keith Gangle, Lisa Schreiber, and David Ama are employees of Gradient Investments, LLC, and may maintain positions in the securities discussed in this podcast. All opinions expressed by them and their guests are solely their own opinion and do not reflect the opinion of Gradient Investments, LLC. Please consult your independent investment advisor before making any investment decisions. The information herein is for informational purposes only and should not be used as the sole basis for making an investment decision. Investing involves risk, including the potential loss of principal. For more information, please request a copy of Gradient Investments, ADV Part 2A. Gradient Investments, LLC is an SEC-registered investment advisor.